Jayan Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivaraja. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhaji. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamana Tira Vana Chadi. Jamana Tira Vana Chadi. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Vishnu Padparamahamsa Parivita Gacharya Astatara Sattva Sri Srimad's Divine Grace Sri Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada Ki Gaur Prema Nandi. Yashoda Nandana, can you confirm that you can hear and our sound system is just fine?
Yes.
Okay. So, you're going to do welcome everybody or you want me to?
I can just do a quick announcement. So, thank you everyone for joining us for our virtual Sunday Feast program. Today we are continuing our Brilliant as the Sun series with His Holiness Rompad Swami, who will be speaking on an overview of the 16th chapter, first canto, but titled Identifying a Wrongdoer. And then also, registration is open for those of you with children for the Vamsi Music School. Some of us may already be familiar. If not, it's led by Radha Kund Mataji, who is a very gifted and well-trained classical singer, and has been teaching the children now for many years. So registration is open. It's available online. Due to the nature of the COVID situation, the children's music classes are taking place online only until further notice. On that note, I'll turn it over to back to you, Maharaj. Thank you so much for agreeing to address us.
Well, not only that, thank you for leading me to the path of the topic, because we had some exchange about the topic, and it turns out that this topic for this week fits for next week. So it was part one and then part two, identifying a wrongdoer. It's real easy. You just point a finger and say, it's his fault. We all know how to do that. But the Bhagavatam teaches us something far more sophisticated and subtle and refined. And chapter 16 follows chapter 15. And chapter 15 is the Pandavas retire timely and they return in their selfsame bodies to the spiritual world after Krishna's departure. But before they do that, the kingdom in charge of in the charge of Yudhisthira, the elder brother of the Pandavas, he turns the kingdom over to Maharaj Parikshit, the grandson of Arjuna, the remaining descendant of that dynasty. So the early parts of the chapter, chapter 16, is describing the quality and character of Maharaj Parikshit and the quality and benefit that one derives from hearing about such exalted devotees as Pandavas and Maharaj Parikshit and their worshipable Krishna. So the section I'd like to focus on comes right after that initial section. And Maharaj Parikshit hears, he comes to understand, that he sees the symptoms that the age of Kali has begun. And knowing what that means, he was simultaneously disturbed. He did not think the matter very palatable, that the symptoms of the age of Kali had begun during his rule. At the same time, it gave it inspired his chivalry spirit as a king, and so he went to quell the influences throughout the land. His whole kingdom was, at that time, the whole earth planet, a big kingdom. And he went here and there encountering disruptive behaviors and kings that needed to be brought into line. And he did all those things. And as he traveled here and there, there's several verses describing, he would hear from learned persons about the virtues of the Pandavas, his grandparents. And along with hearing about the Pandavas, it means one hears about Krishna. And so hearing the kindness that Krishna had extended to his grandparents in so many ways, here's the verse, text number 16 from chapter 16. Out of the causeless mercy of Vishnu, Krishna, he rendered all kinds of services to the malleable sons of Pandu by accepting posts ranging from chariot driver to president to messenger, friend, night watchman, and so on. The Pandavas loved Krishna and Krishna loved the Pandavas, and he was very happy to serve the Pandavas as they were very happy to serve him. And hearing the kindness about Krishna, his heart melted. He was overwhelmed with devotion for Krishna. Now we hear about Krishna's doing these things and we somehow don't become overwhelmed. Well, that's nice. But Maharaj Parikshit was a very pure and exalted personality. So now I'm going to read, starting with text 17, chapter 16 of Canto 1. Now you may hear from me, this is Sutta speaking to the sages of Naimisharanya, you may hear from me what happened while Maharaj Parikshit was passing his days hearing of the good occupations of his forefathers and being absorbed in thought of them. So here's a wrongdoer scenario. And the scenario is the personality of religious principles in the form of a bull named Dharma was wandering about here and there. And Dharma, the personality of religious principles, met the personality of earth in the form of a cow who appeared to grieve like a mother who had lost her child. She had tears in her eyes. and the beauty of her body was lost. Thus, Dharma questioned the earth as follows. The essence of the questions have to do with the cause of earth's despondency. We know that Krishna appeared on earth because Mother Earth, in the form of a cow, went to the demigods, who went to Lord Brahma, who went to the abode of Lord Vishnu, to appeal that Krishna should appear on earth to relieve the burden of the earth of demoniac kings, which Krishna did. And now Krishna has gone, and the influence of demoniac kings is flourishing in the age of Kali. So that's a big problem. So Mother Earth is very sad. So we're going to hear his questions. What's the cause of your sadness? And then she replies by speaking about his misfortune. Dharma, in the form of a bull, asked, "Madam, are you not hale and hearty? Why are you covered with the shadow of grief? It appears by your face that you have become black. Are you suffering from some internal disease? Or are you thinking of some relative who is away at a distant place?" As I'm reading this, my thoughts are going to maybe 45 years ago. In a Hare Krishna temple in New York, there were a group of devotees that performed this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam for Srila Prabhupada as a drama in the temple. So I remember them, you know, rehearsing and saying the lines again and again. It's just taken directly from Srimad Bhagavatam. It was two personalities on the stage, both with like a mask, kind of like you do in a drama. It was very clear it was just a mask. But Mother Earth, in the form of a cow, was walking very slowly and mooing. And Dharma came along, seeing Mother Earth looking like that. And he was the face just behind, kind of like they did The Lion King on Broadway. I saw a picture of it. Didn't see the Broadway show. But it's just a big mask, and the person speaks through the mask. So that was how they dramatized it. And Dharma is speaking to Mother Earth, because Mother Earth, he knew, Mother Earth was relieved when Krishna appeared, but now she looks different because the age of Kali has begun. Dharma says, "I have lost my three legs and am now standing on one only. Are you lamenting for my state of existence? Or are you in great anxiety because henceforward the meat eaters will exploit you? Or are you in a sorry plight because the demigods are now bereft of their share of sacrificial offerings, because no sacrifices are being performed at present? Or are you grieving for the living beings because of their suffering due to famine and drought?" There, Prabhupada explains, it's a long purport, but just quickly, there are four main symptoms of this age of Kali that are diminished. The duration of life is diminished. Mercy is diminished. Power of recollection or memory is diminished. Moral or higher principles to live by are diminished. So those are the four legs of Dharma, four primary principles. And they're largely broken in this age of Kali. And how to restore this? a very important question to ask, how to restore the principles of Dharma in the age of Kali. Prabhupada explains that the principle of Brahminical culture automatically goes to restore the well-being of Dharma and Mother Earth, the bull and the cow. By restoring, working towards restoring Brahminical culture, naturally, simultaneously, or as a byproduct, Dharma is restored. The four legs of Dharma are restored, and the cow, it becomes also protected. Very important. That's a very important principle in the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The purpose of the worship of demigods is also explained. Now, it's not spoken of in glowing language in Bhagavad Gita, but there are persons that are not inclined to take shelter of the personality of Godhead and serve Him. And so something is there. So respecting a higher power, higher authority is encouraged, even if it means the persons who are doing so are doing so because they want something limited and temporary. But it's acknowledging a higher power behind the demigods as the supreme power, the supreme person. It's lending the way towards higher consciousness, mode of goodness, life, and respecting higher authority. Here is more, text 21. Are you feeling compunction for the unhappy women and children who are left forlorn by unscrupulous persons? Or are you unhappy because the goddess of learning is being handled by brahmanas addicted to acts against the principles of religion? Or are you sorry to see that the brahmanas have taken shelter of administrative families that do not respect Brahminical culture? The so-called administrators are now bewildered by the influence of the age of Kali, and thus will they have put all state affairs into disorder. Are you now lamenting this disorder? Now the populace does not follow the rules and regulations for eating, sleeping, drinking, mating, etc., and they are inclined to perform such anywhere and everywhere. Are you unhappy because of this? He's listing symptoms of the age of Kali that are all of the above are sources of distress for Mother Earth, but the distress is aimed at Dharma himself, and she's therefore in distress. Oh, Mother Earth, the Supreme Personality, Godhead Hari, incarnated himself as Lord Sri Krishna just to unload your heavy burden. All his activities here are transcendental, and they cement the path of liberation. You are now bereft of his presence. You are probably now thinking of those activities and feeling sorry in their absence. Mother, you are the reservoir of all riches. Please inform me of the root cause of your tribulations, by which you have been reduced to such a weak state. I think that the powerful influence of time, which conquers the most powerful, might have forcibly taken away all your fortune, which was adored even by the demigods. What's on the topic of identifying wrongdoer, in one sense, without naming his name, the personality of Kali is the wrongdoer. Because by the influence of the personality of Kali, all these categorical deteriorations of human society are taking place. And it's a problem. Good people become spoiled in course of time by bad association, and that bad association stems from the personality of Kali. So here's Mother Earth's reply. The earthly deity in the form of a cow thus replied to the personality religious principles in the form of a bull. O Dharma, whatever you have inquired from me shall be known to you. I shall reply to all these questions. Once you too were maintained by your four legs, and you increased happiness all over the universe by the mercy of the Lord. In him resides, and there's a very wonderful list of 40 different good qualities. So where Krishna exists, good qualities exist. And when Krishna and good qualities exist, the whole world benefits and flourishes. And the absence of Krishna, which comes about in this world at least, by the honoring of Dharma, that's duties of mankind meant for the satisfaction of the personality of Godhead Krishna, that brings Krishna's presence into the world, or one can experience his presence within the world by that effort. The personality of Kali, on the other hand, has a diametrically 180-degree opposite intention. His intention is to take Krishna out of the picture and put something else in the picture. There's a recording and a transcription of the recording of Srila Prabhupada describing a drama that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote. And he was explaining the drama to Hayagriva. Hayagriva at that time was an English professor at a university in America, in Ohio. So Prabhupada wanted him to understand the flow of the drama that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote. And he wanted the devotees to learn the drama and perform the drama to teach people of the world, of our modern day, what's the nature of the personality of Kali and how it comes about. And it's just taken directly from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the drama itself. But the two personalities in the drama are the personality of Kali and his consort, Sin. So personality of Kali is like a madman, laughing and making people's heads spin. And his consort, Sin, is rubbing her hands together and thinking how she can get engage people during this age in sinful activities. And by so doing, the age of Kali takes greater and greater force. Now, it's very significant, that the Mother Earth, in the form of a cow, is to be protected. Because one of the principal sins is taking the life of a cow. Because cow is mother. And a society that doesn't respect mother, what to speak of the opposite, takes the life of mother, receives and then takes the life of mother, most sinful. And what's the and the antidote is not just cow protection, yes, cow protection, but Brahminical culture, because Brahminical culture will help support the principle of cow protection. The Brahminical culture, how is Brahminical culture propagated? Especially in the age of Kali, when people are very, very far from the mode of goodness. How is the mode of goodness propagated, where ignorance and passion are very predominant? It's very clearly expressed in the Bhagavatam itself by topics of the all-good personality of Godhead. the influence of the lower modes, rajas and tamas, are diminished, and sattva becomes restored, which means Brahminical culture becomes restored, which means then in turn cow protection is influenced and dharma is upheld. This is the Bhagavat Dharma method. But where's the wrongdoer? Because that's our topic. Well, we can point a finger at personality of Kali and say, what can we do? We just have this bad association of the personality of Kali. Well, certainly the bad association of the personality of Kali deteriorates good qualities, and we then become victims of the bad qualities. But we also have other options, other choices, other association to keep. And the association, the advisable association to keep, is the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. And those that are speaking it and vibrating it and living by it, those are sadhus or sadhu sangha, association with elevated, spiritually inclined, Krishna-sheltered devotees. Those are sadhus. And by that association of sadhus, one will hear the Bhagavatam, and hearing the Bhagavatam, the lower modes will be reduced and the mode of goodness becomes restored and Brahminical culture becomes restored. Brahmana Vaishnavas, it's a natural process. Good becomes achieved, that which otherwise it seems impossible, mission impossible, because the personality of Kali is very strong, and not only strong, it's his age. It's his time to do his thing, to make people quarrel. It doesn't take a very learned fellow to see the abundance of quarrel ever increasing all around us, all the time. It's the age of Kali, age of quarrel and hypocrisy, where everything good is diminished and everything sinful is increased. It's not an inviting time. The Bhagavatam is giving us the remedy. That the hearing and propagating that which one has heard, this message of Srimad Bhagavatam, far and wide. Hearing it, receiving it, propagating it, far and wide, in ways that are suitable to different audiences. We want to do like that, with full faith. So, Mother Earth is saying, that personality of Godhead, the reservoir of all goodness and beauty, Lord Krishna has now closed his transcendental pastimes and the face of the earth. In his absence, the age of Kali has spread its influence everywhere. So I am sorry to see this condition of existence. So you could say, because Krishna left, he's the cause of wrongdoings. He should have stayed. But he did stay. At least he made his appearance in another form after leaving in that previous form. He appeared in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now that's a pleasant idea. Is it really the same? And the answer is yes. There are persons who saw Krishna during Krishna's manifest pastimes, and they also didn't understand who he was, and they also did mischievous things. The same person and the same purifying potency is available in this age, just as we heard in the introduction words of Yasodhanandana, that brilliant as the sun, that's the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the dark age of Kali, persons can get light from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the light of the Bhagavatam, even in this dark age of Kali. So after Krishna departs, Srimad Bhagavatam appears. Now she's feeling the way she's feeling because Krishna has departed. Now we're going to hear next a little bit more about Maharaj Parikshit seeing the personality of Kali directly attack Dharma in the form of a bull. And his wrongdoing, how a virtuous king addresses himself to that situation. And where there's Brahminical culture, how the Brahmanas address themselves to that situation. Primarily, Vaishnava Brahmanas take responsibility to receive, live by, and propagate the message, the sound vibration of Srimad Bhagavatam with full faith that that will purify and elevate. And sure enough, when done so with faith and carefully, that's factually the effect. Prabhupada demonstrated that himself in his own life. From the time of his arrival, what did he have with him other than his Srimad Bhagavatam and the holy name, and transformed millions of people just on that sound vibration? Now, Kali Yuga was still progressing in different ways and different all over the place. But those that were, at least those who took shelter of that sound vibration, were given a transformation opportunity. That's what, as Vaishnavas, we're encouraged to do. That's our life, following our founder Acharya and the predecessor Acharyas. That's what we're encouraged to do. Take shelter there ourselves and give the same opportunity to others. So this is a Sunday program. I don't know how many people are attending.
About 27.
Okay. So if there's some persons online, particularly our newer persons online, you can send a question into the chat box. And let's see if we can have a little discussion on this topic. And if we need to wait for some people online, you can, in the room, you can ask. There's something online already? No. Anyone in the room would like to discuss some topic here?
Guru Maharaj, continuing the discussion that we started this morning in the Bhagavatam class, you know, the theme is very much in line with that. So, particularly with respect to, you know, like we were discussing in the morning, witnessing a Vaishnav being treated unfairly. You know, on the one hand, we know that truth always prevails in the long term. And on the other side, we also hear this principle of silence means assent. So what is the difference between, you know, calling a spade and, you know, in a blaming consciousness, identifying a wrongdoer?
Well, there's many factors. You're not asking how do we decide should we do this or that. You're asking what's the difference. The difference largely, I think, is qualification and mood. We have examples of very elevated Vaishnavas. Our classics of elevated Vaishnavas include Haridas Thakur and Maharaj Ambarish and Maharaj Parikshit. You know, perfected personalities who didn't protest or King Chittaketu, who didn't protest when they were mistreated or misunderstood or dealt with in a wrong way, unfairly. Everything depends upon attitude. I mean, in the discussion that took place the other evening, besides this morning, Nityananda Prahn asked something not specific to that question, but related. And I gave the example of Jed Bharat, who said nothing when he was mistreated so many times, like his life was put at risk, and he said nothing. But finally he spoke to Rahugana. So there's different circumstances when one should say something and one should simply tolerate. But you know, the difference between saying something wrongly and saying something rightly, or being silent wrongly or being silent rightly, has everything to do with the consciousness or the attitude that one is carrying. And acknowledging what your position is. What is my position in this circumstance? Do I have a position to speak? Or is it my position simply to have forbearance? Like, you know, there's a cultural point is when there's an elder. The elder may say something, and the younger tolerates, because it's the cultural position. They're elder; they're to be respected. So one remains silent, even if one recognizes they're wrong. It's a cultural point. It's just so it's. Then the attitude is by culture, by Vedic culture. Let me respect the elder. You know, we're not very refined in the age of Kali, and people don't abide by culture. They do whatever they want to do and feel justified because I had to do it. Right or wrong, you know. Anyway, so your question specifically is, what's the difference? And I'm saying the difference is the mood or the attitude behind the speaking or not speaking. Recognizing time, place, circumstance, etc., culture. Anyone else? Something in the room? You usually have some nice question or two.
Thinking about the way you said receiving Srimad Bhagavatam and then propagating Srimad Bhagavatam to the extent we have received. But usually it feels like one is not qualified enough to propagate. So how to deal with that feeling?
That's a nice question. The feeling, not just what should you do, but how do you handle the feeling? Well, I'm small and not qualified, and then there are those above me giving me some instruction. Like Prahlad, instructed by the demigods, he went forward, and the first thing he said is, I'm not qualified. They're qualified. But I can see by streams of choice poetry spoken very eloquently, that isn't what did. So I don't have that capacity anyways. So what's important is I've been given some service, and therefore you're very merciful. Let me carry forward with that service. So in the humble mood, knowing that one is not so qualified, you wish to be a representative anyway, because you're instructed to do so. And in that mood of devotion to service to the superiors who are instructing you to do something, you make your best effort, knowing that it's flawed and you're imperfect and so forth. So you're not filled with pride. You're not thinking, you know, in some foolish way, I'm going to go rescue people when you're needing to be rescued. You're just acting as an instrument of some authority that you honor, and they're gesturing, please go forward and deliver this message. Online. Okay, let's go.
Hare Krishna. The first online question we have is, this is from Vishalaksha Prabhu, who writes, how to not identify oneself as a body and doer of things, rather remain a humble servant of Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga in the core of heart and continue to serve them.
Wow, you got it down. Just play that recording back a few times and you'll have the answer. You'll be there. Yeah, there's instructions that we receive, and we just follow those instructions that we receive to our capacity. And gradually that quality and grows and capacity grows, and there's sadhana bhakti. Nice going. You got it. You got the message right. Keep speaking it and following it. Next.
The next question is from Ashish, who writes, Hare Krishna Maharaj, when mistreated, however strongly we practice, we tend to lose calm and either react strongly or think aggressively. How do we control that?
Forgiveness. According to Grandfather Bhishma, that's how you counter it. Forgiveness. And one of the best ways to seek forgiveness, or extend forgiveness, excuse me, is recognizing that you also make mistakes like this, where you're not understanding and not behaving in a way that should, could, would, and you would like to be forgiven for that as you're trying to improve yourself. So the golden rule, in other words, and so you extend forgiveness. How's that? Did we lose you?
No. I wasn't sure if you had more. There was another question. This is from Kathamrita Mataji, who writes, we hear that Dharma Bull is standing on one leg and three legs are broken. When there are sincere devotees who are trying to follow the principles of Dharma, how do we understand that the three principles are broken as they are still existing even though in small proportion of the population? And is it not the same for the fourth principle of truthfulness also, that it is still existing because of the small proportion of the population?
I'm not sure what you're asking. Are you asking, is she asking, Jivanajiva, do you understand what she's asking? It sounds like, is it everybody and has, you know, the three principles of Dharma broken, and there's some portion of the population that have truthfulness remaining? Is that what the question is? Could you send the message in again so that we can have more clarity on what it is that you're asking? Thank you.
Should we move on to the next online question?
Yes,
then?
Yes, please.
Okay. The next one is from Kirti,
Prabhu, who writes, Hare Krishna Maharaj, how to deal with the victim's mentality, or how to deal with the victim mentality?
Well, is that it for oneself or somebody else?
Maybe we can start with oneself.
Yeah. If I am feeling I am a victim, how do I deal with that mentality within myself that I'm a victim? That's the topic. It's really debilitating. When you recognize that that's the trap that you fell in, it's kind of hard to get out because it just feeds upon itself. There are a number of teachings given by our acharyas and scripture that help us get out. But when we're in the victim mentality, there's a tendency to stay there. Something that one devotee sent to me is a statement by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, is these persons are really our best friends because they're acting as instruments of Krishna to bring recognition of our own misdeeds done to others, and it's just reminding us of our own misdeeds done to others. So that may not be their mentality, but that's how one can see some misfortune coming your way. I'm the architect of my own misfortune. Someone is the instrument of that misfortune. I'm the architect. I've created it. And here comes someone that's helping me understand how I have acted wrongly in the past, and they're reminding me this is not good conduct. Something like that. It's not exactly his words, but it's something like that. And, of course, that takes a spiritual conception of life, and it takes kind of not a victim mentality, but genuine humility, spiritual humility, to see when misfortune comes, sad sad yoni janmasu from Bhagavad Gita, we have created our own misfortune. Instead of staying stuck, seeing the misfortune that comes, it's two things. The misfortune that has come is sanctioned by Krishna due to my own past activities, so I accept. And then the other part is moving on with your higher mission of life of taking shelter of Krishna. You know this kirti, this tat tenu kampam so samikshamano verse, very celebrated verse that devotees know backwards and forwards because we have so much tribulation. So we accept the tribulation as deserving. And while we're accepting, we're not protesting or screaming or thinking ourselves a victim of that misfortune. We're fixing our mind on the mission of our spiritual mission of life, taking shelter of the personality of Godhead and his lotus feet, that means his service. And if we continue like that, that's good. We've acted, we're protected. We've taken the right position and we're protected by Krishna. And that means, protected by Krishna means you'll attain Krishna. Oh, just this morning, I didn't respond yet to a letter. I got two letters, some from China. Some terrible thing happened, without whatever it is. And this devotee that was sharing this was appreciating, while in the midst of this terrible thing that was happening, the devotees involved stayed fixed in their service. Their capacity was reduced. The turmoil was going on around them, but they stayed fixed in that mood of service and carrying out their service practically even unnoticed by others around them. They didn't even detect there was turbulence going on in their life in a very extreme way. They were amazed because this devotee that was writing is very close to these individuals that are going through turbulence, and they didn't even know it. And then when they found out what the turbulence was, they were reflecting on how fixed they were in service. The mode of service, not just mechanically doing something, but happily doing something. That's our shelter. So that's an alternative to victim mentality. Very similar to the topic that we discussed yesterday morning, by the way. Go ahead. Something else?
Yes, I got a response or clarification on that earlier question.
Let's hear it.
So in Kali Yuga, all four pillars are diminished. So what does it mean that three of them are broken, given that truthfulness also isn't in fullness in Kali Yuga?
It means that, thank you for that clarification. It means that truthfulness is practically the only thing that remains, and that is also weakened. That's the meaning. Now, in some places, truthfulness is also smashed. But in some places, to some degree, truthfulness remains. And that's important. Truthfulness is very important. Satyam. Upholding truth, living by truth, living by one's word, keeping your word, upholding it, and so forth. Living by the principle of truthfulness is to some degree still remaining. I mean, one of the things that I think about when this question arises, it's something like Bill Clinton. What people didn't like was he lied. And, you know, what he did is one thing, you know, but he lied about it. And then he got a little reprieve when he told the truth. So, Bill Clinton. And so, what about us, you know, people in general, then what about ourselves? You know, something else may be weak, but don't deviate from the truth. And then we restore everything else by that principle of truth. And truth means, in our case, the absolute truth or spiritual truth, higher reality. Live by it. And it'll help restore everything. Okay? Yasoda Nandana, what's next?
The next question is an appreciation that it was explained very well. Then a question, what is the chivalry referred to in texts 26 to 30?
Chivalry in text 26. Well, that's that list of 40 qualities. So why don't we just go look and see what it says in the purport about chivalry. Here it is. Even the personality of Godhead, Sri Rama, displayed such a spirit of chivalry during his marriage. He broke the strongest bow, the Hara Dhanur, and achieved the hand of Sita Devi, the mother of all opulence. The Kshatriya spirit is displayed during marriage festivals, and there is nothing wrong in such fighting. Lord Sri Krishna discharged such responsibility fully, because although he had more than 16,000 wives in each and every case, he fought like a chivalrous Kshatriya and thus secured a wife. To fight 16,000 times. to secure 16,000 wives is certainly possible only for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He displayed full responsibility in every action of his different transcendental pastimes. So that's what's speaking about chivalry. Display of power and skill by a kshatriya. So Krishna displayed those. In many other ways, in so many ways, in his Vrindavan pastimes, he showed his chivalry spirit again and again and again. One of my favorites is Aristasura. So you know the story of the big bull demon, and everyone's, oh no, Aristasura has come. And they're fleeing here and there, and Krishna, please help. So Krishna came. Krishna looked him right in the eye, slaps his left hand on his right arm on his left hand, and leaned over and put his elbow on the shoulder of a cowherd boy and smiled. That's chivalry. And the bull that was really angered, and he tilted his head and showed his horns and charged at Krishna. And Krishna very delicately stepped out of the way, grabbed him by the horns, and threw him to the ground like a wet rag. He was stunned, got up, charged again. So Krishna showed his chivalry in dealing with Aristasura and the others. Okay?
The next question comes from Ramataji, who writes, three of the bull's legs were gone, but Kali had not come completely until Parikshit Maharaj gave him shelter. So how could the three legs that represented nonviolence, cleanliness, and austerity be completely gone?
Well, they were broken, but didn't say they were completely gone. Otherwise, how could he move around? Next.
This is from Srinath Prabhu, who writes, at current times, practice forbearance and humility are seen as signs of weakness.
What humility?
Forbearance.
Forbearance and humility are seen as signs of weakness.
This is especially so at our workplace, where provocation can appear in many ways. How should one handle this situation?
Well, in your workplace, try to be transcendental. And when you're transcendental and experiencing humility, you still may, speak in an appropriate manner for a Vaishnava in the workplace, rather than shouting and raising your voice, or rather than going in a corner and quivering. You may speak clearly, respectfully, but at the same time, depending upon circumstance, appropriate for the circumstance, you speak the truth. So that's not non-humble. That's not whimpering and cowering. It's in a proper humble mood, you speak in the workplace. And forbearance doesn't mean you're just a punching bag. So you may say something, do something in the workplace, but it's not coming from a retaliation platform. It's coming from what may be appropriate. In many cases, it's just like let the water go downstream and it's gone. In some cases, you may feel it necessary to say something, do something, but not in a reactionary mood, but in a, as you're using your word, forbearance mood. You're under service to Krishna from those places of humility and forbearance. Next.
So this question seems along similar lines. When, as a victim, how to decide to fight back or accept as fate, especially when it involves people?
You don't really fight back. That's not recommended anyways. You may do something or not do something, but fight back is not a good option. If you do something, say something, it should be you check yourself inside and see, is the place that I'm functioning from, is it under the guidance of Guru Sadhu Shastra? Is it in the mood of service? Is it, you know, what's the mood behind my speaking or doing something? You know, if you practice like that, then you can easily check yourself from the overreacting and get back mentality. The mood of bhakti is pure, is will correct, will be do the course correction naturally, so under guidance of Guru Sadhu Shastra. Next.
That was the last of the online questions.
Okay. I'm ready for the air conditioning. We turned the air conditioning off because it was kind of loud. And it's warm today. So, I think that covers our topic. Really good online questions. And for those of you that are online, you can look ahead to chapter 17, Compliments of Yasodhanandana. I think I've been invited to speak on chapter 17 next week, right? Say yes.
That's not nice.
Okay. So we're going to wrap it up. Thank you all for coming online and joining. And see you next week, chapter 17. Same topic, identifying wrongdoer. Prabhupada ki jai.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. And this concludes our virtual Sunday feast.
Virtual Sunday feast.